The week before, Dr. Shukla was here and he talked about liberation. And just to briefly summarize the topic of liberation, liberation is freedom. Freedom not in the sense of what we hear as freedom, you know, to practice my religion or freedom to write or criticize, whatever. That is good. You know, we say we live in a free country. But true freedom is the freedom from all bondages, from all restrictions. At the physical level, I depend on physical comforts and physical joys. When my body deteriorates or gets old and I get miserable, at the mental level, when I have joys and sorrows, I go up and down, and one day I'm happy, one day I'm miserable. And at the intellectual level, if things are going very well and I'm doing great, everybody's praising me, I'm on top of the world, and then things don't go well, I become depressed, and some people even commit suicide or, you know, go out and kill others, as we see so many instances where people, because they didn't get what they wanted, they take guns and, you know, go and shoot up everybody else. So a person says, I want freedom from all that. And how do we get that? They say, by realizing that I am that infinite self. That is my true nature. And at this moment, I'm occupying this body. And once I understand that, then I go beyond birth, even death. Because how can there be birth or death for the soul, for the spirit, for the infinite consciousness? My body may perish. It's okay. My mind may fluctuate. My intellect may be success or failure. Even if I get old or sick, but I am not. Nothing happens to me. That understanding, that is what we practice in our meditation also. And that is considered as liberation or moksha. And that is considered the highest goal by many authorities, and that's what even we talk about. But a devotee is very interesting. He says, I don't even want freedom from birth or death. I don't want any of that. So what does he mean by that? Let us see the verse number 6. It's in page 11. What is the nature of devotion or supreme love? That is love for God. How does such an individual think and how does such an individual function in the world? So it's called bhakti lakshanam. What are the indicators that this person loves God? How do we know that this person loves God? Ishvare paramam premam. Paramam premam bhaktirityabhidhiyate. Bhaktirityabhidhiyate asaktir vishaya prema dehadaragrihadishu hadaragrihadishu. So ishvare paramam premam, in the Lord or for the Lord, paramam premam, supreme love for the Lord, is called bhakti, that is called devotion, that is supreme love for God, abhidhiyate, that's what it is called. And what is, how about I say I love my wife, or I love my child, or I love my house, or I love my body, you know, that is the greatest love we have, I love my body. So that is all called asakti, or attachment. Vishaya prema, for objects. Even the body is considered an object. So love for objects is called asakti, is called attachment. And we'll talk about the difference between attachment and supreme love. And that is, what are the things we love? Deha, dara, griha, dishu. So deha means the body. Dara means the spouse. And griha, griha means house, etc., adishu. So let us spend a little time talking about the difference between love and devotion. Why does a devotee say that I do not want to be free from birth or death? A wise person says, Once I realize I am the self, then when I drop my body, then I merge, become one with the Lord, and I'm never born again. I go beyond birth and death. Or even alive, I understand that I am of the nature of the spirit, and the birth and death doesn't belong to me. But a person who loves God says, I don't mind how many times I'm born. Even if I'm born as a bird or a cow, even if I'm born as a bird, O Lord, make sure I build my nest near your temple or near your church, so that every morning I may hear the chants and I may hear the ringing of the bell and I may listen to the singing of the devotees. So I may be in the presence of... He has no problem. He says, doesn't matter. I may be born as a man or a woman. You know, I used to say women, but it doesn't matter. You know what? I may be even born as a dog or even a stone, as long as you use me in building your church. That's fine. I don't mind even coming back as a stone. Why does the person want the body? Because he or she says that I need a body to love and serve God. Even though I know the body goes through changes and goes through sorrows, but I am ready to go through all. You know, even the 9 months in the mother's womb, you know, lying, you know, crumpled up like that, and then going through the labor of, you know, birth, and then childhood and diapers and ABC and, you know, all those things, and then learning. I'm ready to go through all that. And then as people get old, you know, the body deteriorates, the eyesight goes down, the hearing goes down, the arthritis in the knee, in the back. I'm ready to go through all that. Why? Because the body, I need to love God. What I want to do, every part of my body, I want to use to love Him. My eyes, I just want to see the form of God, whichever form I love, whether it's Jesus, or whether it's Krishna, or Buddha, or Shiva, Mother Mary, Mother Goddess. I just want to see the form. I want to see the beautiful glories of my Lord. I want to read about my Lord in books. So I need the eyes. My ears, I should just hear praises of the Lord. I should hear beautiful music and hymns and beautiful songs that talk about the glory of my Lord. Love songs. My speech. You know, we use our speech for so many useless things, you know, criticizing people, gossiping, just talking useless. No, I do not want. I want to just speak about my Lord. I want to talk to others. I want to meet with devotees like that so we can all together talk about how beautiful He is, how wonderful my God is, how kind, how merciful. So my speech should be used in praising the Lord, not for praising some politician or some leader, you know, just because I'm going to get a contract from him. So I go and praise him. Oh, you are the most wonderful person. Why? So I can get my contract, you know, for my firm. No, I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to spend. There is a famous saint in India who said, you know, we use our speech just to praise some local politician. Oh, sir, you are the greatest. You know why? Because, you know, I have this little problem. You know, can you talk to the, you know, in Sacramento or Washington, D.C.? No, my speech should only be to praise the Lord. My hands, instead of doing useless work, let me serve the world. Let me help people in the world as an expression of the Lord. I see the Lord in everybody. My feet should only go to the temple or the church. Or wherever I go with my feet, I should think the Lord is there. The Lord is everywhere. There is a very famous saying. He says, whenever I'm walking, I should think I am going around the Lord's temple. You know, in India, we go around the Lord's temple. We call it parikrama. So wherever I'm walking, Lord, you are everywhere. So this person wants the body just to love, to serve. But here in this world, in this country especially, love is the most misused and abused word. You know, we say, I love everything. I love my dog. I love eggplant. I love ice cream. You know, I love my car. I love my house. Everything. And then the child will come and tell, Mommy, I love you. You are the best. And then 5 minutes later, I hate you. You know, I mean, we don't know the difference whether it's love or whether it's like or whether it's attachment, whether it's fascination. We have only one word, love. But love has so much significance. And what is the difference between love for an ordinary being? It could be, you know, it could be even be your spouse. That's why they say body, wife, and home. What is the difference between love for God and love for my body or love for my spouse or love for my home? Body represents all things related to the body. That means my money, my success, my health, and all that. Wife represents all my relationships, my spouse, my child, my parents, my brother, my sister. And home represents all inanimate objects that I get attached to. It could be my house, my car, my money, my possessions, my power. So that's why they use these three terms, body, wife, and home. Now, what is the difference between attachment and devotion? As we said, person doesn't say, I am devoted to my car, you know, or I am devoted to my house. No, I love my house. I love my car. But to God, you say, I am devoted to God. Why? Because it is something which is higher, which is uplifting. You don't say, I am devoted to my car. I don't go to my car and say, please bless me. And, you know, no. Why? Because car is, and I know I love it, and eventually it's going to get old and break. So love for objects is attachment. Attachment also means dependence. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. So something that is uplifts me, takes me higher, is devotion. And that which makes me dependent is called attachment or love. So is it exclusive or is it inclusive? When I love, say, my body, what do? I spend 2 hours every morning, you know, in the shower, taking a bath and putting all kinds of lotions and perfumes and makeup, and I need 3 hours to get ready. And then it is exclusive. You know, it is only my body. I don't have the same love for another person's body or another person. Or, you know, it's okay. It's not that important. Same thing, a spouse or a child. You know, I love my child and I want my child to do better than the other child. You know, I'm very jealous when another mother's child does better than in class or runs faster in the race. And I tell my child, you know, you need to do better. You need to study more. You need to. So it becomes very exclusive where that alone I like. Why? But if I love God, then my child and everybody's child, they're all children of God. So whoever is doing well, I'm equally happy and I encourage them. Not that I don't, you know, I work with my child. I tell them to try their best, but I'm not dependent for my happiness on how my child is doing. I'm not dependent for my happiness on what is happening. Or my house. I'm so attached to my house that I'll spend hours cleaning and beautifying. And then I become very arrogant because I have a better house than my neighbor. But then I go somewhere else and I to the country club or somewhere and I find a house better than mine. Then I get depressed. So that is attachment. And that is called exclusiveness. Where that alone I want, and that alone, my dog, my cat, my child, my spouse. And love, truly love for God is not exclusive, but inclusive. If I love God, then I cannot hate anybody. How can I say I love God, then I come out and criticize somebody or kick somebody or cheat somebody? You can't, because then it's hypocrisy. You cannot say, I love God. God is so wonderful. And then his creation, you know, it's like I invite somebody on the stage and I garland him, you know, and I present him with a plaque and a garland and a beautiful bouquet of flowers and I really praise him. And then as he's going, I take a stick and break his leg. you say, well, what are you doing? He said, I didn't honor you? Yeah, but then you hurt me in the leg. So similarly, you cannot say, I love God, honor God, and then his legs, you know, because all legs are his legs, all hands are his hands, all eyes are his eyes. So it has to be universal love. Love for all is truly devotion. A true devotee of the Lord loves everybody. Then they say devotion takes you higher and attachment takes you lower. Because when I'm attached to somebody, like, you know, example is this boy, you know, he was A plus and then he fell in love. Now, do we say he rose in love? No, he fell in love. Why? Because he went down. Nobody says, I fell in devotion. I rose in devotion. But I fell in love. Don't we say, oh, I fell in love with this girl. And so this boy loved this girl and he fell in love. How he had A plus before in his grades, now his grades are underwater. So what do you mean underwater? Below sea level. So that which brings you lower, you know, and love for objects is like that. It makes me dependent. It makes me sometimes, you know, like this is a true story. This boy loved this girl very much, but her parents maybe saw something in the boy they didn't like. Maybe they found him too controlling, or they could sense something is wrong. So they told her daughter, no, don't go out with this boy. And the boy got so angry that, and this is a true story, this happened in Los Angeles. He was so upset that he went to the parents' house, he shot them both and burnt their house. He set fire to their house completely. The house was gutted, and he actually was going to take a flight out of the country. But luckily the police found out and they caught him at the airport. And of course now he'll spend the rest of his life in jail. So he neither got the girl, and he created so much misery for himself. So that is what they mean, that love, when it becomes attachment, it is exclusive. I want her for myself. No, if I can't have her, nobody can have her. You know, people actually kill their, you know, the object of their attachment if she doesn't respond, return my love. So true devotee of the Lord includes everybody in his love. That's why Christ said, love thy neighbor as thyself. He didn't say love thy Christian neighbor or Muslim neighbor or white neighbor or black neighbor or Hispanic neighbor. He said love thy neighbor, whoever that neighbor is, be he is or she is, love them as much as you love yourself. So that's why they say love is inclusive. And attachment takes us lower and devotion takes us higher. Because devotion is always for something higher. Like the person might say, I am devoted to my church. You know, I love my church, but I am devoted because it's something higher. Or I am devoted to my country. You know, people for their country do anything. They sacrifice their life, especially when the country was going through the freedom struggle in India, when we were trying to get freedom from the British. Or even here in the War of Independence, when Washington was leading the country. And people were ready to do anything, sacrifice their life, give up their, you know, wealth, give up their homes, and, you know, give up their family and spend months and years in the battle. So love takes you higher in devotion. And then attachment for people or objects decreases with time. That's why they say, you know, love at first sight and divorce at second look. I remember I had a secretary, this is a true story. She was married for 8 years and, you know, I had a very nice husband. They had 2 children. And then one day she said, I'm getting a divorce. I said, why? What happened? Does your husband beat you? No. Does he take care of you? Yes. Does he love your children? Yes. Does he love you? Yes. So then why are you leaving him? He doesn't do anything for me anymore. Doesn't turn me on. I don't have any excitement in my marriage. So she doesn't have any excitement. So she gives up everything. 8 years of marriage, 2 kids, and just walks away. So that's what they say. Love, when it is of the nature of attachment, decreases with time. while devotion for God or love for God increases. The more you talk about God, the more you think about Him, the more time you spend in the company of divine people and saintly people, the more you read the Bible or the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita, the more you read books about God, your love increases, never decreases. You just have to, that's what our Swami Chinmayananda, the founder of the mission, said, that turn your mind in devotion to the Lord, He will purify it and give it back to you. So the more you think about God, the more time you spend in His company, more time you spend thinking about Him, more your life becomes pure, your heart becomes pure, you get uplifted, you become more happy, more cheerful. So it increases. Love for objects creates dependence. Like, you know, I heard all these examples of people who committed horrible deeds because they couldn't live without that person. So, and it could be not only a person, it could be an object. It, like, you know, they, like somebody so dependent on their money that when the stock market crashed, so many people committed suicide. Why? Because that was their whole life and identification was only money. And if I have money, I'm good, I'm great. If I don't have money, I'm useless. So it creates dependence. And it could be anything. Like I said, some people, when their car crashes, it's like they died, you know, or their wife died. They become so miserable. Or if you go by and there's a scratch on their car, oh my God, they fall apart. Oh, you know, this is called dependence. This is called attachment. But true love for God and for an object is when you release it. That's what they say. If you love something, let it go. And if it comes back to you, then it is yours. If it doesn't come back, then it was not meant to be. So the ability to be free of that. You know, yes, I love this person, very good. But tomorrow, if this person is not in my life or this object in my life, I am still fine. I am still okay. Today, my husband says, I love you. Today, he doesn't. I am still okay. So that kind of freedom, that kind of independence comes when a person is content, when a person starts loving God. And again, it does not mean that by loving God, I don't love people. In fact, I love them even more because I see my beloved God. When I'm cooking for my children or when I'm cleaning my house, I say, why am I cleaning my house? Because God resides here. Or when I'm doing the dishes, because God is there in everything. God is there in the food I cook. God is there in... So constant remembrance, and it releases you from the limitations, the narrow thinking. It makes you more wide, makes you more expansive. The last question is, how do we measure love? What is the measure of love? Like a father will come and ask a child, how much do you love me? He says, yes, daddy, I love you. How much do you love me? So the little poor child will spread out his hands and say, I love you this much. And then the second stupid question that parents ask is, do you love me more or do you love mommy more? That's one of the most stupid questions you can ask a child. What is he going to say? If the father alone is there, he'll say, daddy, I love you more. The mommy alone is there, he'll say, mommy, I love. But if they are both standing, poor kid, what is he going to say? He'll say, give me my PlayStation. You know, he's a politician. He doesn't want to get in trouble. So how do we measure love? How can I say that I love something? They say the most important measure of love is sacrifice. Are you ready to sacrifice? Like, I have an object A. Now, this object A or this person A tells me, sacrifice B. So I say, no, I cannot sacrifice B for A. That means I love B more than I love A. It's like, you know, I say I love my church or I love my mission or I love my... But then people say, you know, you need to donate some money. No. Money, how can I give money? Okay, give us some time. Come and clean the church or do some work. No. Time is money. So if I value money more than I value my church, or if I value my time, then I truly do not love. And the greatest love, of course, is love for God. But even in the worldly relationships, if I love a girl or if she loves me, then I'm willing to sacrifice everything. I'm willing to sacrifice my, you know, comforts. Tomorrow she says, you know, let's go for this movie and I want to go for another movie. I don't become rigid. I say, it's okay. Today we, you know, go to yours and then tomorrow I go to mine. So the ability to sacrifice my pet ideas, my pet beliefs, and not to become rigid, you know, this alone, my way or highway. No, I am ready to sacrifice whatever it takes so that my beloved is happy. You know, the idea of sacrifice is that my beloved should be happy and I'm ready to do anything to make her happy, because in her happiness is my happiness. So that is called true love. It's not that how much she gives me happiness and how much happiness I get from her, but how much happiness I can give, that is called true love. That is called true sacrifice. And it can be for the nation. That's why John F. Kennedy said, you know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. So ability to sacrifice, and on the spiritual path, when I'm ready to sacrifice everything to get my spiritual goal, and once a person decides that that is my highest goal, that is what I want to go, that is what I want to achieve, then nothing is as important. That kind of one-pointed determination is required in anything. You know, suppose you want to be a great basketball player. You can't say, you know, I'm going to spend 2 hours a day with my children and 4 hours a day with my wife and then 2 hours a day with the stock market and then play basketball, you know, No, you can't. He said, I have to play basketball 8 hours a day, and if I have time for the others, why? Because I have to succeed. Or he wants to win the marathon. Or a great scientist who is making a great discovery or an invention. Or in the Bay Area, we find people who do these startups, you know, the startups where they start new internet companies. My nephew, and, you know, I found that he, in the first few years, exclusively was giving so much time to his company, where he unfortunately didn't have time for his wife. You might say, well, that's not good, but then after 4 or 5 years, now he's successful. The company is doing very well. He has 3-4 branches all over the world. And now he can spend time with his wife. So the point is that to be successful in anything, you have to sacrifice. You have to give it time. So similarly, in spirituality, the ability to sacrifice, the ability to give up what I love for the higher goal is a measure of how much I love God, how much I love anything. Even ego. Ego is a different subject, is a big subject, and is part of the next class. So we won't talk about ego today, but we'll talk about that next week. What is the role of ego and in love for God? So it's a beautiful subject. We can talk for hours, but I thought let people add anything to that or contribute.
And the sad thing is that they're delusional and their paradigm isn't even real.
Mm-hmm.
They made it up. They just don't realize it.
Right. And they think it is love. You know, they think it is pure love, but then it's love, more attachment or addiction rather than true love, right? That's true. So yeah, it comes together, you know, dependence and all of them together, dependency and decrease with time and, you know, exclusive, not inclusive, you know, I want attachment. They're all connected, absolutely. Yeah, one is related to the other. And then leads to violence, leads to all kinds of wrong, you know, attitudes, jealousy, greed, you know, all that. That's why, in at least for Hindus, they say the Bhagavad Gita is your instruction manual. Just as when you buy a new car, you have a manual, you know, which you don't read, or you get a new phone or a VCR or, you know, olden days, whatever it was, the TV always had an instruction manual which you're supposed. So the spiritual literature is the instruction manual that tells you how to live your life. And at least we find the Bhagavad Gita, not only spiritually, it tells you how to turn your mind to God, but how to live your life in the world. The path of love, the path of service, the path of sacrifice, and how to, you know, make yourself independent of, you know, things and beings, so you are not dependent. All that is taught in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, which we discuss every Sunday morning. Not in the summer, but it will start in August. And that's what I find. That's why I enjoy reading the Bhagavad Gita, because it helps me to deal much better with the world. Because in world, everybody has stresses. You know, life can be stressful, can be difficult. Things always don't go well. But if you have this instruction manual, I think that's an excellent point. To me, that is the instruction manual, because that has the answer.
Experience, because you could know the truth and you didn't.
True. But I think experience can be three kinds. You know, they say there are three kinds of people. One, see somebody else making those mistakes, and so learn from their mistakes. You know, that or somebody else has gone through that and has written the textbook, has written the literature, so he knows or she has gone through. So I learn from their experience. The lower one is who himself has to make the mistakes and go through the life to learn. The third one is who makes the mistakes and still doesn't learn from his own experience. So do you want to learn from others' experience or from your own experience or not? But you're right. A lot of times, unless you yourself have experience, you don't learn. But this spiritual literature has been composed by saints and rishis who have gone through the world, who have seen. And maybe they have not experienced everything, but in their wisdom, because they, all of them, these great masters, whether it's Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya or all these great Ved Vyasa and all these great rishis, they were in touch with the higher. That's why Jesus spent so many years in isolation. That's why we find Buddha spent so many years in meditation, because all these great prophets are in touch with the higher. So it's like their antenna is tuned to the higher. And so when they speak, it's not only the wisdom of a human, but it's the wisdom of God. And so their knowledge, that's why they consider this as a universal scripture, because it comes from the higher. That's why our scriptures are called Shrutis. Shrutis means it was heard. So these great rishis, these great sages, in their deep meditation, their mind was in touch with the higher consciousness. And so when they spoke, it was what they had listened, not what they had thought. It's not the human mind that can compose these scriptures. The scriptures cannot be composed by an ordinary human being, whether it's Bible or Bhagavad Gita or Guru Granth Sahib or the literature of the Hebrew, the Jews and all. They're all composed because it comes from a higher source. So these great prophets, whether it's Moses, whether it's David or Abraham, they were in touch. That's why they say Moses went up to the mountain and God gave him the Ten Commandments. So he didn't say they are my commandments. They are given to me by God. So that's why the spiritual literature comes from a higher source. That's why it's called heard. It's not called thought. He didn't think and write, but he heard it in his meditation. But that's a good point. Yeah. Thank you.